Today's show is brought to you by AdvanceAutoParts.com. Save 20% off your first order at www.AdvanceAutoOffer.com/chickenduck. Enter promo code AAP20CAST for 20% savings.
Motorcycle thieves, your reign of terror is over. There's now a bounty on your head put up by the New England Motorcycle Museum, the Heyman Law Firm, and the Connecticut Motorcycle Clubs.
Is that Tanda?
No, watch! It's Captain America!
Fight with me against them that steal our motorcycles. Take hold of thy shield and sword and stand up and help. Let the thieves be confounded and put to shame those that seek to steal our motorcycles. Let them be turned back and brought to confusion and devise their destruction. Let them be as chaff before the wind, and let the angels of the Lord chase them. So you think you're safe because you're stealing bikes and bringing it to the inner city? My brother Carlos has a message for you.
It's official. The MC's already got a contract with the inner city gangs to get you. Yes. So when you think home, you're going to come home. You're crazy. Buckshot for you, baby.
If you're lucky, the cops will get you first. Let their way be dark and slippery, and let the angel of the Lord persecute them. Let destruction come upon those who steal our motorcycles, and our souls shall be joyful in their pain and suffering.
Well, I guess we don't have to ask that question now.
Hunted him like a hound of hell.
For the fourth time, can you finish this fucking story? He just opened up a museum. You're trying to talk him into moving to Florida.
Do your job. He must need a wheelbarrow for his balls.
Welcome back, everybody. Episode 107, Saturdays with Chicken Duck. It's just Casey and me today in the basement.
So far.
Vu is a no-show, and we kicked everybody else out for the last week or two just to get everything back to our core, back to our basics.
That's right.
I feel so dirty. Sorry, Jeff. Joining us this week is the owner of the New England Motorcycle Museum, Ken Kaplan, otherwise known as Kaplan America. Also joining us today, Doug Danger. He'll be calling in a little bit.
Hey, guys. It's Ken Kaplan from the New England Motorcycle Museum. How you doing?
Hey, Ken. How are you?
Good, good. Do we have a podcast going on today?
Yes, we do.
Okay, what would you like me to do?
You're on it right now, man. We've been recording.
Oh, awesome.
We've been recording for a couple minutes. So,
and, okay, perfect.
Yeah, Doug's going to be calling at 12:30. So
beautiful, beautiful.
That's what we wanted to talk to you about: your museum and Doug Danger jumping there on June 1st. So
absolutely, yeah. He came to our racers reunion in December, signed the New England Hall of Fame. Dropped off a bunch of memorabilia and met with a bunch of racers there that he grew up with in Mass. He's originally from Massachusetts. Guy's definitely a legend, set the world record. Jump on a Harley-Davidson XR 750 22 cars with, like, I think 6 inches of suspension travel. So definitely an amazing individual. So
that was Evel Knievel's bike, right?
Yeah, it was. He had told me that I guess the bike was valued at somewhere around $350,000, and he had to get a large insurance policy to jump it. And it was basically the same exact, it was the same bike that Evel jumped. I'm not sure if he did any modifications. I'm sure he had tuned it up and everything else, but it looked to me by the pictures as it had the same forks, the original 35 millimeter forks, which are by today's standards, you know, it's technology's come so far. He'll jump on a CR500 and he'll jump on the Harley too, but the risk associated with taking a heavy, you know, heavy XR750 and launching it over 21 cars, is probably 100 times riskier than doing it on, let's say, a an aluminum frame CR500 or a new 450 or something that is equipped with 43 millimeter upside down forks and a foot of suspension, you know?
Absolutely, man. Yeah. I'll tell you how we got to talking to Doug Danger and how I got into the motorcycle jumping and all that. I travel for work and I went to the Evel Knievel Museum there in Topeka. And
awesome.
They have a 4D jump there that Doug, I guess, did for the Evel Knievel days. And they filmed the whole thing and they have it set up there at the museum. And like, I've been obsessed with Evel Knievel and motorcycle jumpers like since then. So we talked to Doug Danger on one of our episodes a while back. And when I saw that he was going to be jumping at your museum, I wanted to talk to you about your museum because I definitely want to get up there at some point.
Absolutely. You have my cell phone number. Call me when you're coming out. We'll roll out the red carpet. How old are you?
I'm 38.
Okay, so you're a little bit younger. I'm 53. When I was a kid, we used to watch Evel Knievel. That was like the big thing, man. That was like bigger than the Super Bowl. And I believe some of the records he set for the amount of people that viewed have never been surpassed. The guy was a legend. And I was just a little kid, you know, 9 years old when he was doing it, 9, 10 years old. So it left a massive impression on my psyche. The guy was a legend, bigger than life. And, you know, at the time I was on a Yamaha GT80, 9 years old, and I rode all the time. And like Evel was the man. He was such a character and daredevil, far ahead of his time, you know, hitting those massive jumps on bikes that were ill-equipped. It really left a, you know, and of course the Snake River jump, I mean, all that, and all the times he got mangled, and man, it was, it left a huge impression. I've spoke to Doug about it a bunch of times too. He left a huge impression on Doug's psyche also, and inspired him to do the Evel Knievel tribute with his outfit and jump in the bike. And he said, this isn't to take away from Evel. This is to honor him with his respect for and admiration for what he accomplished at a, you know, setting the standard back then so high, the bar so high with the jumps on that type of a bike. And to, you know, you probably know Doug had a battle with cancer not too long ago, right?
Yeah, we talked to him about that on the show.
Yeah, he beat that. And then can you read it? Have you read the poem that he wrote that's on the poster that he signs and hands out?
No,
we haven't gotten our poster yet, incidentally.
it's gonna give you a little insight into Doug's mind. He's just as much of a daredevil. And in my opinion, I'm and I've raced motocross for 40 years and won a bunch of amateur championships. And I've done my share of triple jumps. I've done supercross and motocross my whole life. To do that kind of a jump on that type of bike, I don't think you could put any amount of money on the table and say, Ken, huck this XR750 over 21 cars. I, you know, it's just the risk is too high. It's too much of a probability. And the ramp he jumped on, did you see the ramp?
Yeah.
You seen pictures of the ramp? It was a homemade ramp at a 2x4s that he built himself.
Yeah, it's
and he
crazy.
Set up the whole thing in like a half an hour, just set it up. a testimony both to his skill set, which is amazing. He's an amazingly skilled rider. And also, like, you know, his balls, he must need a wheelbarrow for his balls, you know, there's that much courage to attempt that jump on that bike. Like I said, I consider I'm an ex-pro rider. I have an AMA card. I never qualified for a national, but I raced a bunch of them in qualifiers, made it real close, but I was always too big. I was like 230 and riding stock bikes, 6'2". I should have been a wrestler instead, but I definitely was the wrong size for that sport. But the I love racing and I've always admired both Doug and what he's accomplished and what Evel accomplished, and to have him beat cancer and then go out and like a couple of years later, well, I don't think it was like a year or two after he beat the cancer, he goes out and risks his life doing that jump. And on the poster, you see him at the height of the jump, probably he's got to be 35 feet in the air. Maybe 40. And on this little 4-inch travel XR750, spindly forks, and landing on a wooden ramp, and the ramp was steep. So I know a lot about jumping, and the shorter the ramp, you know, for motocross, the shorter the ramp, the more risky. I don't think the ramp was more than 50 feet long, you know? So it was like, you see some of these guys doing the big jumps, and they got like 100-foot ramps, you know, that are built. It took them months to build. It looks like he built it in a weekend at his house, you know, with a couple buddies. And there was no, in my opinion, I would say there was maybe a 10-foot margin of error over 22 cars. Yeah. You know, 10-foot too long or too short, and it would have been curtains. And he hucked it, landed it, just absolutely freaking amazing. It's a testimony to his skills and also his courage. So And I was like, wow, how cool would it be to have him come to a jump at the museum, you know? And I called him and he said, yeah, so it's game on.
So what is he jumping at the museum?
We haven't, I told him straight up. I said, Doug, you're 53 years old. I don't want you to get hurt here.
Yeah.
He's a motivational speaker too. And, he does speaks to different groups and students and people with cancer, cause he's a cancer survivor. And he is an actual legit motivator. He's coming Friday night doing a motivational speech at the museum. And then he's going to do a jump Saturday. I left it totally up to him. I said, I don't want any pressure on you. I don't want to do anything that's too risky. I just want you to come up, huck a jump and walk away. So I don't know. And he has nothing to prove at 53 years old that sure, he's right. accomplished so far, you know? So it's totally up to him. No pressure. And I said, do you want to use Evil's bike or do you want to do your CR 500? And keep, you know, obviously any sane man would choose the CR. So he suggested we use the CR, which, you know, he's got a world-class aluminum. I think it's, I don't know if it's aluminum or steel frame, but the thing's all set up with special suspension and everything. So I'm sure he'll whatever jump he attempts will be a lot safer than on an XR 750. I mean, I guess that goes without saying, but
yeah, absolutely.
So and I left it open. I said, whatever time of the day you want to do it, we'll work our event around you. I own a 50-acre farm about 5 miles from where the museum is, and I gave him the option to do it at the museum or at the farm. The farm has a big 15-acre field, so he hasn't told me whether he's doing it at the farm or at the museum, but definitely an honor to have him there. He his poster is on the on the wall at the Hall of Fame thing that all the champions sign is on, I won't spoil it for you, but you got to read it because it's like 4 or 5 paragraphs, and it talks about the risk of dying and jumping, and you know it's pretty cool. It's an insight to the psyche of a true American hero and legend. You know, world class jumper who's no spring chicken. He's not a 21-year-old kid on a 450. You know, who's built like rubber. He's our age. You know, he's 50 in his 50s. So
yeah, but talking about the wheelbarrow to carry his balls. When we talked to him, his wife refused to cancel his tour when he had that when he was going through the chemo and all that, and he did a jump and I think got banged up pretty bad.
But he drove into the wall, didn't he?
In Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Somewhere. I mean,
broke his rib. He broke his ribs pretty badly, I recall, right?
He overran the ramp and ran into whatever the barrier was, but he ran in pretty damn hard.
Yeah. I mean, he was going through chemo and stuff then. I mean, that's insane.
Hey. Yeah. The guy's no joke, man. He's a real deal. You know, ironically, he's also humble. When he came to the racers reunion we had at the museum, and we inducted Jimmy Ellis into the Hall of Fame. And I don't know, do you guys follow New England motocross or AMA motocross at all?
Not particularly, no.
Have you ever heard of Doug Henry or John Dowd?
I've heard the names.
They're former national champions, Jimmy Ellis. Then it was all the legends from the New England, like JoJo Keller. And he grew up in Mass. So he was there as a special guest, wore a suit and everything, was signing autographs and whatnot. We had 300 racers show up plus their families, so it was a pretty big event. He was like, these guys are my heroes. These are the guys that taught me how to jump when I was a kid, you know, and he's very much a fan of the sport of motocross. And he knew a lot of the guys that were there. He survived with them because he's from our area, you know, from Mass. He lives in Florida now, but so a lot of them knew him, and it was kind of cool. It was a cool experience having him there, and definitely add a lot to the event we're having. It's called Rockstock 2019. We are a motorcycle museum, but we're also a music venue. We've got an entertainment director who's been in the industry a while. We did a Rockstock event with 11 bands this past October on opening weekend. And this we're doing it again. Actually, it was called Rocktober. This next one's called Rockstock. And the featured event is going to be Doug doing his jump on Saturday. I think Doug lined up a monster truck too. that was part of the deal. although I don't have that. I'm 99% sure he's got some monster truck coming up too. So the monster truck, we'll have Doug, we'll have all kinds of vendors. We have a Harley Davidson stunt rider team. And we have, at this point, 21 bands signed up, including Dirty Deeds, AC/DC tribute band. And we're suspecting that somewhere around 3,000 people a day will probably show up if the weather's good. So maybe we're shooting for 10,000 people over 3 days.
Nice.
Cool. So, yeah, that's coming up pretty quick, too. I mean, we're in February 1st, March, April, May. It's like 14 weeks away. So,
yeah, actually, I think I'm planning on coming up for that jump, for the Doug Danger jump. Me and Jimmy's uncle are going to take a ride up.
Nice.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, if you can come up for the weekend, get a book a hotel room, because I think all the hotels are going to get sold out in the area. And if you have a camper, I have a 50-acre farm and a motocross jack. You're more than welcome to set up camp here at my house and farm.
Nice.
And there'll be some space at the museum for RVs, but I think that's going to book up quick with all the vendors, and parking's kind of at a premium there. But I've got a huge 15-acre field, so if you got a camper, an RV, or a pop tent, you just want to set up a tent, just let me know, and we'll make sure you get directions to the place and an invite and the whole nine yards and everything.
Awesome, nice. Man. So why don't you tell us, before Doug calls, why don't you tell us a little bit about your museum, why you started it? And
the place is beautiful.
Yeah,
we're looking at pictures of it now. And it is just really nice looking.
I know it took you a lot of work. I was reading a bunch of newspaper articles about it, and a lot of work and a lot of money.
Oh God, yeah. We put, believe it or not, over 100 man years of labor into the main big building. There's 10 buildings. It's an 1814 industrial complex that, over the course of 100 years, they built a total of 11 buildings. Not two of them we had a demo, but there's 9 buildings left, comprising 150,000 square foot. It has every type of architecture, from the original post and beam to brick to a poured in place concrete and a steel building. So it's kind of a cool, so you see all the different industrial progressions. But I'm there because I've been here since fourth grade, and I really like old architecture and old buildings, and I wanted a spot to set up a motorcycle shop to run with my son when I retired at 47 after 25 years in the computer industry. I decided this is what I want to do, and I approached the town. I had a deposit on a building, and they're like, hey, before you do that, we've got a brownfield, an abandoned factory we want to redevelop, and I've got a good reputation in the area as a businessman. So I partnered with the town and the state. We attempted and succeeded in resurrecting this abandoned factory, which is a football field long, 4 stories tall. The wood building in the front, the main one, if you go on Google Maps, you can see what it looked like. They didn't change it. They didn't drive by and retake the videos. If you Google Maps 200 West Main Street, you'll see what a disaster it was. You know, there was trees growing out of everywhere. There was no driveways. We had to replace everything. You know, the building, that's a whole story itself, the whole resurrection of the buildings that I could literally talk about for hours, all the challenges we had with every single type of nomenclature, you know, every acronym, the EPA, the DEP, OSHA, the State Historic Parks Office, the OSTA, the Office of the State Traffic Authority, the Department of Economic Development, like the entire, there were so many different governing bodies that got involved that I didn't even know existed when we attempted to resurrect this, that it ended up taking me 7 years and $6.5 million to finish the building in the first phase of the project, which is actually 3 buildings, 2 smaller ones also. So we have about 65,000 square foot that's totally rebuilt. Ended up being about $100 a square foot, like double what we anticipated it would cost based on all of the setbacks and loopholes. And we're probably 3 years behind schedule. It took us forever to get permits, but I was like a bulldog with a toy. I wasn't going to give it up. You know, I was going to succeed or die trying.
And these photos are from 2012. How quickly did you guys do that? That's insane.
Seven years it took him.
I mean,
we're looking at the photos of
I'm on Google Maps right now looking at the
previous pictures.
Says these photos are from the 12th or August 12th. I'm sorry, August 2012. And the main,
yeah, that's when we closed on it a couple months before then.
Yeah, because there's a couple of your vehicles out in the one side of the parking lot, and the rest of the building looks pretty dilapidated, like you said. That's crazy, man.
It was a disaster. Yeah, it was really something else. And we had, there's things that I don't want to get too much into it, but it was governed by the state sort of parks and the federal parks, because it's on a list of historic spots, because they made 4 president suits there. And so little things like when you go to order windows, they have to be exactly like the ones made in 1814, but nobody on the planet makes them except for 2 small companies, and they charge like $1,200 for a window that should be $300. Yeah. So, you can't get any permits unless you follow those rules. So, you know, do the math. There's 287 windows that cost you a grand more than they should have. And they're all wood. They just drop them on the dock, and you got to make these brand new square windows fit into a building that's settled and has an oblong window hole. So it was a total shit show. You know, the truth is I've enjoyed every day there. It's been like Christmas to me, because we make massive project with the buildings. When you get, you know, a team of guys working on it, and you see this immediate gratification where you take something that was total pile of crap and make it beautiful, you know, just one piece of wood at a time. So like restoring motorcycles, you know, there's immediate gratification there when you sandblast a frame and paint it, you know, and that's been one of the driving things. Like I never wake up going, geez, I wish I didn't do this, or I don't want to go. I'm there 7 days a week unless something's up that I'm doing otherwise. So I'm very obsessed with the project. And as far as my obsession for motorcycles, it runs even deeper than that. Like every vacation I ever took my entire life was to go to Laconia, Daytona, Sturgis. I used to be the road captain for the fifth chapter of three patch group and club MC. And I raced motocross for 40 years and I raced all forms of different types of racing, mostly motocross and supercross. And so I realized halfway through my computer career, I hate computers. This sucks. I love motorcycles. Let me get the hell out of this and into something I'd rather do before it's too late and I drop dead miserable. So I made a plan when my son was born to retire and open a shop with him. And I didn't give a shit, you know, if it was a two-car bay and just me and him, but he's my best friend. And we spent a lot of time together racing since he was 7 days old. I took him to the Southwick National in a basket at 7 days old. He's been to everyone since. And, you know, he's raced competitively and we're best friends. So I wanted to spend time with him and, you know, he didn't want anything to do with the computer company. So I never would have seen him if I stayed in that. So we started this business in 2012 and we opened the shop in 13. He was a freshman in high school and we used to ride a Honda 50cc scooter 12 miles to work, you know, year round in the snow, whatever, rain. He showed up every day and he showed a lot of interest in it. So now he's handles all the sales. We sold 54 motorcycles last month. He does all the paperwork, all the titles, negotiates all the shipping and handles all the clients. And, you know, I do all the purchasing and we do every video. There's 1500 videos on our YouTube channel. We just broke 16,000 subscribers and 7 million views last month. We had one video go viral, get 520,000 views in 2 weeks. So this whole social media thing has really been amazing with YouTube and Facebook. We have a Facebook page for the motorcycle museum and one for Kaplan Cycles, the buy, sell, trade business. And like I said, every day's Christmas, like people, collectors bring stuff there, like pictures of their grandfather or, you know, an old helmet or, you know, an old flat track boot or, you know, everybody brings, I feel like, you know, baby awesome. Jesus some days, you know, you come in and it's like all these gifts, you know, it's like, wow. You know, it's like the motorcycle community is so cool. The people are, and I've touched so many people in 40 years of racing. Like these people in the race community are more my family than my blood family straight up. Cause I camped out with them every weekend and, you know, been through blood, sweat and tears and broken bones and deaths and all kinds of stuff. And so you form strong bonds. And there's that concept, man. I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning last night. It hit me. And I've heard of it before. It's called the 6 degrees of separation. It talks about how we're all interconnected. It's been proven. And there's, if you Google 6 degrees of separation and read the Wikipedia description, I encourage you to do that. You'll see how we're all tied together. And back in the 60s, when they came up with that theory and it was proven to be true, they even had a movie, TV series about it. It's now with the social media, it's down to 3 degrees of separation. It's down to 3.84 people. You can touch anybody in the world. Now think about it. In the motorcycle community, it's even tighter than that because we're like 5% of the population rides a motorcycle. We're more interconnected. So it kind of hit me last night. I was like, wow, you know, if we do this right and we promote each other's events and we promote each other's venues and businesses and we work together, there's no reason why we can't blow this thing up and make the museum in Rockville a destination place like Americator or Laconia and, you know, have it be a legacy that is passed down when I'm dead and gone. Cause I'm not doing this for myself, man. I've invested $1.1 million a year on average over the last 6.5 years. And I haven't taken a penny out of it. I've gone weeks with my electricity shut off in my house. Honest to God, straight up, my electricity got shut off because I ran out of money, but I wanted to pay the staff that was working there. So I put everything on the line for this thing, you know, a lot of blood, sweat and tears and a lot of risk, you know, being around mold and lead and arsenic. And you know, I was in there knee deep with these guys with Tyvek suits on cleaning this shit up. I was right in the middle of the crumbled buildings, yanking out, you know, whatever we could salvage. So I'm not sitting there with a pencil or on the sidelines. Some people do. I've been in this thing, man, in built no heat and no air conditioning for 7 years. So we've sweated our balls off all summer and froze. I wear a snowmobile suit to work because we couldn't, we finally got the heat turned on in October, but it's a 45,000 square foot building that's post and beam with brick. It's like a big barn, and there's no insulation because the state historic parks officer wouldn't let us insulate it.
Oh my God.
She wanted it original. So we got the heat bill for November and December. It was $7,000. I was like, holy shit. You know, that's like probably double what our ticket sales were. So I was like, this isn't going to fucking work. So, we got the heat at 50 degrees and we're wearing snowmobile underwear and snowmobile suits. You know, I have complete faith that this is going to take off and be something absolutely amazing. This is the year 2019. We've got all these great events. We got Doug Danger. We've got the whole motocross community. We love mini bikes. We love motorcycles. We love jet bikes. Matter of fact, my son and I are getting Yamaha tuning fork tattoos in Daytona this year. And we go down there because we both race Yamahas for forever. And I've been riding Yamaha since 71. I ride a Harley when I ride with the MCs, you know, of course, you know, I have Harleys and Indians and all kinds. We love all kinds of motorcycles. We're motorcycle enthusiasts. We're motorcycle nuts. We're just totally obsessed with it. And I count my blessings. My son has the same obsession. He just bought a vintage 71 Yamaha DT1 out of Texas the other day. And he just bought an MX 250 of 74. And he's going to try to win the AMA number one national plate at Mid Ohio this summer at the Vintage National. So, you know, it's just cool having a son that's that much into it. And,
that's awesome.
Like I said, I've got a lot of great friends in the motorcycle community that are stronger than blood binds with the rest of my family that I don't spend too much time with anymore, because unless you're at a motorcycle event or at the museum, you're not going to see me because it's all I ever do.
Well, the place looks
kind
great,
of a story.
Man.
I don't know if I'm rambling, but.
That's all right. Doug is calling right now.
Hello.
Hey, Doug, are you there?
Yeah.
Hey, man.
What's
Casey.
Going on?
You're on the phone with Casey, Ken, and Jim. How are you?
Good, good. What's going on?
Not much. Can you hear us, Ken? We might have lost Ken.
Oh, shit.
Hold on one second there, Doug.
Oh, shit. We lost Ken.
We lost Ken.
How you doing, Doug?
Good, man. Doing good.
We were just talking to Ken Kaplan for about the last half hour.
Uh-huh.
Talking about your upcoming jump and the museum and stuff like that. So figured we'd say hello to you while we were at it.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. That's a heck of a museum he's got down there. We went up there for that get together of all the motocross guys, and it was so fantastic to see all the guys that were always my hero when I was growing up, you know.
Yeah.
And just to see how far all of them went with motocross and how well they did, and they all showed up and they were coming over and talking with me, and just they were real proud of me that as far as I'd made it with my career. And it was just a real family warm type situation. And of course we got to see all the unbelievable motorcycles down there. I mean, if you're into vintage stuff at all, you got to go to this museum. It's unbelievable.
I think we're going to make a trip there for your
we're going to come up for your jump.
Oh, cool. I'm excited about this jump. I'm getting in my later years of jumping here. My career doesn't have a whole lot of years left, and
I think you got a couple of good years yet. You're
this
fine.
Is one what's that?
I said you got a couple. You're fine yet. You're good.
Well, what I'm saying is that I don't know how many New England shows I have left. And if you would like to see the excitement of the Doug Danger show, I'd really love everybody to come on out, say hi. I'm going to have some world record posters, some posters of the world record jump on Evel Knievel's Harley Davidson there that we'll be selling, and everybody can get an autograph and everything. It'd be great to see everybody.
Awesome. Hey, I'm gonna get Ken back on the
okay.
call here. If that's all right with you, bear with
sure.
us for 1 second. We're learning things as we go here on the fly. Are you there, Ken?
You there?
How
Ken?
Are you?
There we go.
Is that everybody?
Is Doug on here?
Doug, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah.
Hey,
great
Doug.
Success.
What's happening, Doug?
What's going on, man? Sitting down here in Florida in this 75 degree weather, enjoying it. Nah, getting ready to watch the Patriots win the Super Bowl.
Nice.
Well, I guess we don't have to ask that question now.
Yeah, cut that one out of the question.
Is that
hey Doug, we should probably try to get you on the halftime show next year doing a jump there. That how badass would that be?
That would be awesome, man. We'd actually
we'll make some phone calls.
See if doing one.
We'll see if we can make it happen, man. That'd be badass.
That'd be great. Come back to my hometown area, and I really do miss New England an awful lot. I love the people up there. It's a whole variety of people down here in Florida. When you're walking around up in New England, we got heroes, and we got, you know, teams that we are diehard fans up there. And just I love watching as you walk around up there. Everybody's got on a Boston Red Sox hat or shirt. They got a Patriots shirt or a hat, something, you know. They got all their fans, all their heroes shirts and stuff. They're the greatest fans in the world come from New England.
That's true.
We'll let that one slide, I guess.
we're from outside of Philly, so.
Oh, you got some good fans there, too. Last year you guys beat us in the Super Bowl.
That's right. Yeah, we didn't quite make it this year.
No, right. It's you know, the thing is, like, I was proud to see you guys win it because I don't think you guys had ever won one before, had you?
I don't think so, no.
I don't think they ever won a Super Bowl. And you know what? We're not being idiots and stuff. It's like, hey, somebody's got to win it. That's what we like to see. We'd like to win it every time you go at it competing to be the best, to do the best. But you got to admit that this era of Belichick and Brady has
seems
been
a little,
unbelievable.
Seems absolutely kind of unstoppable.
You'll probably never see crazy anything like this.
Absolutely. No, and Jimmy and I aren't the biggest sports fans either, but, I mean, you got to hand it to Tom Brady and Belichick. I mean, there's no question about it. He's definitely one of the best that there ever was, you know?
Yep. And it's like I apply a lot of Belichick's thinking to the jumps that I do. It's every single time it's got to be the best, and it doesn't matter what you get paid. Go out there and perform to the best of your ability. And if people leave happy with what you've done, then you've done your job. And that's his term is do your job.
That's what you got to do.
I have that hat.
That's the best you can do.
I wear that hat all the time.
The do your job hat?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, if every player on a team does his job, you can't help but win.
Ken, I have a quick question for you. We didn't get out when we were talking to you. The Kaplan America video is online. How did that come about? Were you hired by like a law firm or something to do that? Or
actually, John Heyman is one of the best biker, if not the best biker attorney in New England. He goes to all events. He sponsors a lot of events, and we've become good friends in the last few years because we're both, you know, pro motorcyclists and everything. So, and he's against the bike thief thing, but the Kaplan America character really was, I went to an off-road race called the Thunderdome race. I'd never been there before, put on by an MC called Murder Cycles, and they rent a fairground, Lebanon Fairground, for the whole weekend. And they do a bunch of, bike games. And then they have like I think it's like an eighth or a little less than an eighth mile flat track. I went out there and I had a Trump shirt on along with a red, white, and blue helmet. And it was really dusty, so I wore this face mask. So one of the full patch brothers, Ray Lewis, he's like, I won the race, you know, and I got the flag, and I'm driving on the track, and he said, it's Kaplan America, you know. So like Ray Lewis kind of started it, and I took the ball and ran with it. You know, I'm big time into Honda CR500s, just like Doug is. And I had a totally pimped out 89 CR500. So I took it and I put some American flags on it. I had already had a red, white, and blue 6D. So my girlfriend's a graphic artist, and I had some red, white, and blue Fox gear. And she put Kaplan America on the back and a big fat number one and USA on the side, made in the USA across the crotch, you know? So, I took the ball and completely ran with it. And I use that character to hammer home the points. Like when I need to go get a little crazy, like Ken Kaplan's a businessman, he owns a motorcycle museum. And to have this other character, that I can let my hair down a little bit, so to speak, and say what's really on my mind. That's kind of what it is. And I took the ball and kind of ran with it. Maybe I ran a little too far with it, but it really kind of goes back to my admiration for Doug Danger and Evel Knievel. Like they're wearing all the red, white, and blue. And since I was a little kid, that's been like ingrained in my psyche, you know, big time. You know, it's definitely as much as Doug's affinity for and respect and admiration for what Evel has done. It's kind of like a similar. That's how I feel about Doug, what he's done, you know, with his career. And of course, I'm 53, so Evel Knievel also. So it's kind of like that whole American hero, dyed-in-the-wool American, red-blooded American, believing the Second Amendment. And, man, I hate bike thieves. It makes my blood boil. And a local bike theft ring made the mistake of robbing the museum 2 years ago, and I hunted them like the hounds of hell, put out rewards and stuff, literally stalked them once I camped out across the street and shit with my crew, and we got the bikes back and had them arrested.
Really?
But
well, that's a great ending to that story, because I mean,
We watched that video, and it was like, really, the production value of that video is insane.
Yeah.
For you're just going after bike Thanks. Thieves. And I was thinking, they must have got a lot of bikes.
Well, they stole 10 motorcycles from my immediate family. They stole two from the museum, which we got both of them back, and both those guys went to prison, 2-year sentences on both of them. One just got out. The other one was Tim Blodgett. Only 2 years. They were actually 18 years old when they got arrested. So it is like this gray area in Connecticut where they don't charge you fully until you're 19. I don't know. These aren't first offenders. They had been busted multiple times as minors, but it's not on their record until you turn 18. So anyway, they got busted.
Steal a motorcycle, what that does to people. You know, I lost a motorcycle Christmas morning. Somebody stole it. And you want to talk about ruining a Christmas? You know, I sat there crying all day Christmas. And it's a good thing I didn't get a hold of those people, because it wouldn't have been pretty what I would have done to them. You know, thieves, I hate thieves, man. I hate them. And to me, if you steal somebody's motorcycle, that's a piece of them. That's like killing a family member to me, you know?
They stole my son's personal race bike, which we have 200 bikes in the museum, and they came in and stole it. It was a factory connection, pro circuit, kitted YZ250. I mean, it was a top of line everything, and he almost won the 2015 amateur championship with it. You know, it was his bike. And they stole my Jeremy McGrath replica. Dude, I went fucking, my blood was boiling. I went ape shit. I grabbed my Mossberg 930, fucking loaded it with 9 rounds. I grabbed a machete and a baseball bat, and I was going out the door to where the informants told me they were. I was going to kick their fucking door in. And then the state cops got involved and the local police. I was so fucking pissed off, man. It's a good thing that things didn't go the way they could have gone. I calmed down and left the gun at home. I went there. I had the baseball bat and the machete, and I was sitting in the fucking bushes across the street looking at the garage door, and the cops said, if you step on the property, they said, you're going to be arrested for trespassing. So we waited, and the next morning, 10 a.m., they opened the garage fucking door and took off on my son's bike. It had a 35Y on it. What? You could see it from across the street, yellow amateur plates with a 35Y for youth, you know? And one of my guys chased him down the road. He got away. We ended up getting him later. But 2 years later, this was June, October, 3 days before we opened, they steal Tim Blodgett's fork. Of his vintage race bikes, a CR480, a YZ250, and a couple other bikes. And one of the kids got killed up in Mass. He was riding it on the street with a girl on the back. He went under a car and died on the stolen bike. And then recently, about 4 weeks ago, they stole one of my son's lifelong friends. They've been going to school together since preschool, literally. They stole both of his KTMs 2 miles from my house. So that kind of reignited my passion. I did another video after that about the anti-theft thing. And it's been a major, that's 10 motorcycles from my immediate inner circle, you know, and the cops are telling me these guys stole 400 bikes out of the Northeast shit. Connecticut region. 400.
And they got 2 years. 2 years.
They 2 years and they're out. And one of the informants,
that's a joke.
There's an informant. Yeah, no shit. There's an informant that we were paying for information. And, we were told that he's back to stealing bikes again. So, you know, we're doing everything we can to stop it. You know, we're working closely with the Vernon police and the state police and the anybody who will work with us, including other avenues you can go down to get the truth. So, but it's still not finished. These guys are still at large. The cops said there was 23, the state police and the Wilmington police and the Vernon police, the three departments, when I met with them to get our bikes back after they were recovered, they said that there's just 23 suspects involved with the ring and that they had stolen over 300 bikes. And that was 2 years ago. So who knows how many that they've stolen since then? Like only two of them got busted.
Well,
and they're,
it's too bad they weren't down here in Florida. If you step on my property, I can shoot you. And I'm not guilty.
Yeah.
Of
it's a different set of
you're
rules
trespassing,
down there. Doug.
You're breaking the law.
I don't go anywhere without a gun, and I understand the laws are a little different up here, but if you break into my house, you're definitely getting shot. I'm not going to ask questions, and I've got weapons everywhere. So because of...
Yeah, well, down here, you wouldn't even get in trouble for it.
Yeah.
You wouldn't even, Texas you wouldn't the even same get arrested.
Now, Doug, he just opened up a museum. You're trying to talk him into moving to Florida. You got to...
I'm not going anywhere, man. I'm stuck up here for life, man. I'll be down there for winters, man.
Oh, come on over, say hi, man. I'm just south of Daytona.
I'm coming down for bike week.
Well, look me up, man. We'll get together and have a drink.
You got it. Sorry to interrupt. You were going to say something?
Oh, that's all right. After seeing those videos of Captain America on YouTube, I mean, I definitely would not fuck with you, man. I mean, you look pretty scary. We seen some photos of you from your computer when you owned the computer business, and you had quite the transformation there.
Yeah, I was like 250 pounds then. I'm like 220 now. I'm a lot leaner, and I had really short hair. So I was selling asset recovery programs to Fortune 500 companies for their PCs. So I had a suit and tie job for 25 years. I fucking hated it, and got out as soon as I could. You know.
Now
I get to play with motorcycles and hang out with my friends and my family. It's awesome.
That's great, man.
I'll tell you what, my father always told me, find something that you absolutely love to do and figure out how to make money with it, and you'll never work a day in your life. And when I get done doing a jump, I have so much fun out there. I mean, as long as everything goes right. I get done, I go over, I'm signing autographs, and the whole time I'm thinking, I'm getting paid right now to do this. You know, it's so exciting. It's so much fun. And see the faces on the kids. It's just unbelievable. It's so rewarding. And I have lived a life of a king. You know, I've had so much fun. I've traveled the world, gotten paid to do it, and just have enjoyed life to the fullest.
It's awesome.
Good stuff, man.
That's an American dream right there. No doubt about it.
Yeah, and that's why I love America so much, because anybody that wants to do anything in this country, if you have a dream, go for it, because it's all you have to do is start doing what you love to do, and the rest will follow. Things will start to happen. That's what happened with me. I started jumping. I booked a show, made some newspapers. And next thing you know, I had a racetrack calling me. I was doing a show at a racetrack. As I did the show at the racetracks, other racetracks started calling. Then I made a phone call up to New Hampshire International Speedway about breaking a world record, and they had me come up for the national up there, and we set some world records for attendance when I did the world record up there. It just took off from there. Dreams happen if you pursue them. Just, you got to try to do it. I do public speaking in schools, and I try to get kids to have dreams. And that's the biggest thing I've noticed in schools, is people don't have dreams anymore. But you got to have dreams and want them and go after them, because it can happen.
You two are perfect examples of both of the of all of that. That's we definitely appreciate you guys giving us your time this afternoon.
Doug, I have a mission that I need your help. I need your help for a mission that's like a kind of near and dear to my heart here. We've noticed a huge drop off in the enrollment in the New England Sports Committee and the New England Minicycle Association with new riders coming up, and it's because of the internet, because of the millennial psychology. They don't even like cars, a lot of them, and also their parents, and a lot of things have been getting shut down in the area. So I'm going to have an event this summer. It's going to be called Mini Bike Mania, and I've got a local Honda dealer, a local KTM dealer, and I've got a Yamaha dealer. They're going to bring all their minis down and do special pricing with packages. So when we're going to do an event, we have the Long Island Mini Bike Racers, I've got the Moto Farm team coming down. I got Ray Luce with motorcycles and their mini bike throwdown. I'm going to have a shitload of different groups, like 10 different groups of mini riders come up, and we're going to give free tickets to every K-12 in Connecticut and invite a bunch of kids here to see mini bikes. And how cool would that be to have Doug Danger there signing autographs, you know, maybe do a motivational speech exactly like the one you just talked about, you know, and you might change some of these kids' lives and maybe spark a fire in that group we need, which is new riders.
Absolutely. Get me a date, and I'll check to see if I'm available. I'll definitely participate in that. I just read up today, motorcycle sales and motorcycle products have increased over from 2016 to 2017, and it increased again from 2017 to 2018. So things are turned around and starting to head back in the right direction again. And I think with support from people like yourself and myself, I think we can get this motorcycle world back getting into something besides sitting there tapping your phone. You know, we can get it back where kids are out having dreams of motorcycles.
Amen to that.
You know, you get racing. Amen. It's a physical activity.
And as you know, you forge lifetime friendships through that community too, the racing community, evidenced by the event.
Absolutely.
That you were at, Doug, in December. 300 guys that race together since they were kids, you know, and it's just awesome.
Yep. It was.
You got to pass it. Pass it on.
It was just unbelievable. Yeah, it was so great.
We already booked this. Oh man, and those guys were my heroes. You know.
Yeah, they were awesome, man. It was great meeting them all.
Doug, we're doing that again December 2nd. So, well, yeah, definitely keep that date open, man. We want you here for sure. Absolutely. Actually, excuse me, it's November 23rd. This year was December 5th. The old men that used to race Facebook page, Jim Boshin, he promotes the event. It's the weekend before Thanksgiving on the 23rd. I'll send you down a plane ticket or the money for a ticket. I want you up here for that event, Doug, for sure.
All right. Sounds good, man. I really enjoyed myself there. A lot of times people don't feel like they fit in, but I'll tell you what, if you seem like you're kind of an outsider, like, you know, all these people are into football, all these people into baseball, all these people into schoolwork, come down and hang out with motorcyclists. Motorcyclists are like a group of misfits that belong together. I mean, we think a little differently, and we like to have a lot more fun. You know, they got an old saying that says motorcyclists have more fun than people do. You know, and it's so true. We have so much fun. And when we get us all in the same room together, man, look out, because it's just so much fun. And if you've always had trouble fitting in a little bit, come on by and see us and let's hang out. You don't get made fun of. It's like you get talked into doing things crazier, funner than you've ever done in your life. It's just spectacular. So I'm hoping everybody come out for that. It was such a good time last time, and I'll come on up and I'll have my leathers again, and we'll get some posters out and we'll be signing some autographs for people.
You know, we have your signed poster. The big one is that before you got on the phone, I was telling them about your poster and the poem that you wrote on there and how badass that was. That is on the Hall of Fame. It's on the board. So
cool.
Right after you left,
that's
we put awesome. It up there. It's there permanently.
That's awesome, Doug. You know, Ken, I got to tell you, I'm really glad that you've made me part of this whole deal down there, because, well, it's actually up there for me. I'm so proud of what you've done. You know, it's like a dream. You know, I've always had an idea of having a Daredevil museum, but it involves so many more people than just Daredevil. It's so cool. But I mean, motocross guys are daredevils in their own right. I mean, the jumps that I do, like at these monster truck shows, these guys are doing like lap after lap after lap. They're doing these double jumps that are the same distance. And it's incredible riding skills. And motocross is where I got my talent for jumping. You know, I used to race a long time ago.
Yeah. The kids have really taken it to a whole new level. Even the stunt riding on Harley Davidsons. I mean, the people weren't even really, besides Evel Knievel, no one was even riding wheelies. Besides Evel Knievel and you, nobody was even riding wheelies on Harleys until recently, you know, or very few. Now they got these kids that are doing like ridiculous stunt riding, the sports, you know, the whole flip thing.
Oh,
I can't even flip off a diving board into a pond. These dudes are doing double flips on a motorcycle. It's totally insane, man. I have mad respect for those kids.
I know.
It's awesome.
Everybody started talking to me about doing backflips, and I said, the only time I've ever done a flip, it wasn't on purpose.
Exactly. Yeah, it's good stuff, man.
So, Doug, do you have any other jumps coming up that you want to promote?
Well, we're working on right now. I'm dealing with a promoter in Daytona. We're trying to get something for Bike Week. It's going to be just a build-up jump. We're trying to do a world record jump on Evel Knievel's motorcycle again. I think Travis Pastrana, I think he did 16 buses, I think it was. We're going to add one bus to it and on Evel Knievel's 1972 Harley Davidson. I want to do it down here in Daytona for either Biketoberfest or Bike Week, but I've been getting a lot of resistance down here. I don't think that the community is like big pro biker situation, although there's millions of bikes down here.
Right.
And Bike Week down here is one of the biggest money makers that there is. You know, it's 10 times more money than they do with the car race week. Because all the bikers come down, they all get hotel rooms, they all stay for the week, they go out all day long, they tip like crazy. And, you know, it's most of the people here, all the businesses here love Bike Week.
Yeah. I've been down to Bike Week twice down at Daytona, and both times it was outrageously a good time.
Yeah.
It's everybody has this pretty much the same mindset. I mean, it's just a good party for, you know, the whole time you're there.
Yeah, I was going to say earlier when you were saying about hanging out with bikers, if you want to have a good time, Jimmy and I have spent some time with bikers, and yes, it's definitely a good time.
Yeah, they like to have fun.
Yeah.
You know, the only other place that I've been that really is the ultimate bike week is the Buffalo Chip out in Sturgis. My buddy Woody owns that, and he brought me in for that 22 car jump on Evel Knievel's Harley Davidson. And, you know, they put on a show there. They have all the big bands, all the big shows. It's just an incredible, it's like a Woodstock for bikers. You know,
wow.
Great time out there. Super lot of fun.
That's awesome.
I talked with Woody. He may have me do that 16 bus jump there next year. 17 bus jump, I'm sorry.
At Sturgis.
Yeah.
So Doug, the jump that you're doing here at the museum, June 1st, I'm pretty sure I told the guys in that we actually are calling it Rockstock because we want it to be a Woodstock for bikers. That's exactly, and you just said it. So I was like, wow. So, and you're the featured event on Saturday and doing the motivational speaking on Friday. So we got 21 bands signed up. So there'll be lots of live music, but we got our permit for our liquor license been submitted. So hopefully the bar will be open. If not, you know, well, it's a BYOB, bring your own keg. Well, we're going to have a big party, man. It's going to be a 3-day event and it's going to spill over to my 50 acre
time.
Farm. Oh yeah.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
We just want people to be responsible and not drink and drive from it, but it's, I mean, this will be a good time. This sounds like it's going to be awesome. It might turn into like the next Woodstock.
I hope so, but that's my plan specifically. You know.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. We're definitely going to come up for that jump.
Absolutely,
great, man.
So, and what's the date on that again, Ken?
Doug chose June 1st as a 3-day event, and he hasn't given me what time he wants to jump. I wanted to leave it all the details up to him as far as what time he jumps and where he sets the ramps up and the whole nine yards. So, and how far he jumps. So no pressure. We just want him to come and have a good time and be, you know, positive influence on the group. So
very cool.
As he always is.
Yeah. We'll have to figure it out what time to go on, but I'm super excited about it. You know, my New England fans, every time I do a show, you know, for a while they weren't coming out because, you know, they'd seen me jump before. And what's happened recently now, since I did that jump on Evel's bike, is everybody is realizing that things are slowing down for me. It's getting to the point where if you want to see Doug Danger, get it done pretty soon because not a lot of years left in this old guy. But
we'll have the whole motocross community. We'll have the whole motocross community there for sure, Doug. All your friends,
that's
Mike
great,
Diggett,
man.
Digger, and all the guys you grew up with riding here, they'll all be here, and all the MCs will be here, and all the people that used to go to your bar will be here. You're going to have a huge fan turnout here. I'm going to promote the shit out of this for you.
Yeah,
absolutely.
This is going to be awesome. I'm excited.
Good time.
Like I said, New England fans are the greatest. They, you know, when they like something, they're very vocal about it.
It's going to be awesome, man. I'm so psyched.
Yeah.
It's coming up fast, too. I mean, it's in 16 weeks, Doug.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Time flies, man.
On my way home, when I was coming off the road last year, I got into an accident and somebody wiped out the side of my jump trailer. So I've got that torn apart now. We're working on that, getting that all put back together for the 2019 season. And that's going to actually be my first jump of the year. Unless I do this
awesome
Daytona deal. If I do the Daytona deal, then we're going to be really, you know, that's going to be a really tight issue because we're waiting the last minute to get the okay on it. So
yep.
If we don't get that one, it'll be my first show of 2019, and I'm going to kick the season off right.
Awesome, man. And Ken, where can people find information about your museum and the upcoming events and all that?
Well, probably the best way is our website or our Facebook page or our YouTube channel. So if you Google New England Motorcycle Museum, you'll see a link to the Facebook page or the website or the YouTube channel. And there's some cool videos on the YouTube channel. I think there's 1,500 motorcycle videos of bikes we've restored over the last 4 or 5 years.
Nice.
So there's some cool stuff on there.
Excellent.
great videos of the museum on there too. Like on the local news, there's a, on the front page of the YouTube channel, there's a link to some local news stuff that was done on the museum. So videos and that kind of thing.
All right, guys. Hey, we really appreciate your time today. We will certainly stay in touch because we'll both be at the jump. We want to see the museum. I don't know if we'll get there before the jump, but we definitely want to get up there to see the museum. So we will definitely stay in touch with both of you gentlemen, and have a great day. Go Patriots.
Yeah, we really appreciate you coming on.
Hey, let me know when you guys are coming up, and we'll roll out the red carpet for you. Doug, I'll be calling you before I head down to Daytona. I'd like to hook up with you at Daytona, go out for a couple beers or something.
Absolutely. Hey, you need a place to stay. I'm 26 miles south of Daytona.
There you go.
I'm going to have my camper. I'm bringing down my fun movers, little 18-footer I towed behind my van. So, yeah, we're going to be mobile. So I don't know if you have room in your lot there. I could maybe spend an evening or something.
I sure do.
So we usually camp out in the infield and, hit Main Street and all the, the Daytona 200 and the Supercross and the Flat Track Series and all that, and all the bands and bike shows. It's so much to see. It's awesome. I love Bike Week.
Yeah. All right, well, just let me know if you need a place. I got room in my yard down here.
All right, brother. Thanks a lot, man.
All right, guys. Take care. Thank you very much.
Enjoy it, guys.
Have a good one.
Okay.
Hey, God bless all you guys, and God bless America. Great country.
Thanks a lot, Ken.
Bye. Take care, guys.
All right, Doug Danger and Ken Kaplan. So make sure you check out the New England motorcycle.
The old New England motorcycle, his hand.
The
motorcycles.
So
I ride motorcycles.
Be sure to check out the New England Motorcycle Museum on their Facebook. They have a website. Check all that out. Doug Danger. We'll definitely be up there. Maybe we can do a little videotaping of the jump for our YouTube channel.
Maybe we could look for some unsolved mysteries.
And check out
Segway
coming soon, I think, for a March 4th release date, Berks County Unsolved.
We need some theme music.
Oh, we'll get it. Don't worry. So look for that coming. That'll be on all Chicken Duck platforms. Check us out, chickenduckpod.com, patreon.com/chickenduck, YouTube, Saturdays with Chicken Duck. Instagram, Chicken Duck Pod, all that. Just search for Saturdays with Chicken Duck. We're around.
Berks County. What's
so
it called?
So, yeah.
We're going to tweak this music just a little bit.
Sure. Jimmy and I, and probably Kyle, I think, is going to get in on this, we're going to start a new podcast about the unsolved murders in Berks County, Pennsylvania, where we're from. There are over 100 unsolved murders, which is just mind-boggling.
I guess. I mean, it's a lot. Yeah.
It's not that big of a county. You know what I
mean? No.
So,
but, I mean, Redding's in the middle of that.
Yeah.
And you said Gary Miller.
Gary Miller, yeah.
I thought it was Gary Redner.
Well, there's a Gary Redner also, Gary Miller.
Who's Gary Miller?
He was murdered outside.
I don't want to give up no spoiler alerts.
No, no. Well, this is going to be our first episode. It's going to be Gary Miller.
Let's go right now.
No, we can't. He was murdered, though, outside. I don't know if you remember before they did all the work down going towards Lancaster on the 222 there. Is that 222
yeah.
South? Where there used to be that porn shop on the one side, and they tore it down. Then they put the big cement plant there for the road work.
Yeah.
He was a gospel music promoter. He was
in Moton.
Yeah, in Moton. He was a gospel music promoter. He went from dinner with his coworker into the city of Reading, which he didn't live near. And then he went and he was parked at this porn shop, and he was murdered there. And he tried to drive away, and he didn't make it. So that'll be our first episode. That was in 1999 that happened. And it's just fucking crazy.
Yeah, I'm excited.
We're going to take that podcast a little more seriously than this one. I don't
know what you're talking about.
I think
I've been taking this too seriously almost.
I've been taking Chicken Duck pretty serious.
I don't know why.
You haven't. But I think that you're a little more interested in this upcoming podcast.
Yeah.
And I think maybe if maybe we do a little research and we do like one every 2 weeks, maybe.
Oh.
On Mondays.
I was thinking about doing one every day.
Every day? What?
Yeah.
We're just going to be 100 days and then
I think we should quit our jobs and record 5 episodes on Monday. Every Monday. And release it by 6 o'clock in the morning every day. Just like Rhett and Link.
If we start monetizing our podcast, if we can make like...
Is that a word?
Monetizing?
Yeah.
I think.
It doesn't sound right coming out of your mouth. Did you...
Hey, Google. Is monetize a word? Hey, Google. Monetize a word?
Manatees?
Here's the definition of monetize. Convert into or express in the form of currency.
So, yes, monetize is a word. Sorry, it doesn't sound right coming out of my mouth. But if we could, if we can make, if we can get, like, start getting on Patreon for our new podcast, like, $3,000 a week, I'll quit my job. We can split that.
Oh, okay. Oh,
of course.
So, wait, I can quit my job then, too.
Yeah, we get $1,500 a week then.
That would
have to be the goal.
That would be it for me, yeah. But, I mean, it would need to be consistently.
Well, sure.
And
we'd have to get Patreon somewhere.
And I would need health insurance.
Well, if you make $1,500
bucks
a week.
And my car and plane tickets for you all the time.
Why? If we're podcasting, I don't have to go anywhere.
Why can't we be famous
for Chicken Duck?
No, listen. I'm interested in becoming an influencer, but I don't think that I influence anybody in anything.
What does that mean?
Like
a public speaker? Like
makeup?
Danger?
No, like a girl that does makeup on YouTube. Your fucking laugh reaction was so funny.
I
just mean that would be an example of an influencer. I don't mean I want to be a girl doing makeup on YouTube.
Well, I can tell you exactly how you can be an influencer. You can be an Instagram influencer.
I don't have Instagram.
Well, I'm telling you how you can be an Instagram influencer. Mm-mm. Do you want me to tell you?
You just told me.
No. I'm saying you can be. No. Don't play that.
I'm not. I'm looking for an influencer. Oh, she's an influencer.
So you want to be a YouTuber?
They send her fucking $300 boxes of fruits from around the world. Why aren't we getting $300 bottles of or boxes of fruit? What? Ken just told us that it's like Christmas to him every day, that people just show up randomly.
He owns a museum.
Well, let's own a fucking museum.
What kind of museum?
I don't know. Just a generic museum where people drop generic.
You can be in
a museum. A museum.
Let's wrap this up.
No, I'm having so much fun, just me and you.
What else do you want to talk about?
This is like back to our roots. Have you watched any of the show that I recommended you that you watch?
Ted Bundy tapes?
No. Letterkenny?
No.
Dude.
I forgot all about it.
Please go home and watch the first episode.
We'll see.
Just go home and watch the first episode. It's 25 minutes.
Text it to me then. Is it a cartoon?
No.
Text it to
That's
me.
That's Brickleberry. Where are you going after this?
I'm going home, and then I will be watching the Super Bowl.
Where are you going for the yacht?
Home. Super Bowl was last week, but I watched it today. Had it on DVR.
Tap Room showing last year's Super Bowl.
What?
Yeah,
are they really?
Eagle game.
That's
yeah, he got it on the he got it on a DVD.
Excuse me.
No.
So.
Is the skull really staying here?
Oh, yeah.
What? Can you give me a background story? I'm sorry, everybody. There's a, I don't know if it's wood.
Yeah, it's wood.
It looks like wood carved skull on my.
It's a wooden skull carved.
Why, though? Like, why?
Well, it looks pretty cool.
It will
be
when
like
I'm
mascot.
I'm going to put LEDs inside.
He can
of
be our mascot.
Talk. I'm making talk.
And
let me see.
Yeah.
So I could drill.
So when I was in Destin with
drill in there.
Barbara.
Oh, my family.
Yeah, with Barbara, my girlfriend. nanny, your mom, your dad, Carrie, all those.
The rest people. Of my family, yeah. Right. I got you. I understand.
We went shopping, and Harry was in this like hippie store, and I saw that there, and I got it. It was like $15.
$15?
Yeah. I thought, wow, that looked pretty cool in Jim's basement on the table, on the podcast table.
I'm going to hang it up or something.
No. It's for the table.
No, because it doesn't fit.
It does. It fits right here in between the...
No, I'm going to put it like next to the lamp so when Devin comes down here to smoke a cigarette, she pisses herself.
Fits right there just fine.
I don't know where I'm going to hang the old traffic light.
In a corner somewhere?
Well, it's got pipe openings at the top and the bottom for inch and a half pipe. So I might just build...
For a stand?
Yeah, I might build a stand out of just galvanized pipe.
Yeah. Pretty simple, if you ask me.
I'm just very lazy. What else do you have to talk about besides these two?
I mean, I have a ton of shit. Oh. I have a ton of notes.
Let's just get going, then. What are we doing?
I don't know.
Well, then when he calls in, we can get going.
All right.
I don't feel like spending the whole afternoon with you. Like,
nice.
Show up with a skull. Novu?
He hasn't texted me.
Guess all that TV talk was just hopes and dreams.
So I was at one, this was like before we went to Jamaica, when I was traveling for work still. I'll be back to that next week. I was in the Dallas airport, and I had a bunch of time to kill, so I got lunch, and I got a fajita plate, which is like pretty, you know, it was a bunch of food.
Sizzling?
Yeah, sizzling.
Mm-hmm.
And I ate just about everything. I didn't finish I didn't eat the wraps. I didn't put the stuff inside the wraps and eat them. And I didn't eat the beans, right? And so the guy comes over to me, the waiter, and he says, I've never seen anybody finish all this food before. I was like, what are you trying to say? Oh, no, it's just, it must have been good. I'm like, okay. I was like, I didn't eat the wraps or the beans, though. He's like, well, it's still a lot of food, man. I was like,
fuck you,
what are
dude?
You trying to say?
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd have his ass. That's like discrimination in today's society.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, you can't say
I took a note. I wrote it down. That's why it bothered me that much.
You're in good shape.
I mean,
shape of
not
your life.
Quite.
Shape of your life.
Not quite.
By any standard.
No, the shape of my life was when I was wrestling and
doing methamphetamine.
Doing cocaine. So, yeah, fuck you, waiter in the Dallas restaurant.
Was it in the airport? Or?
Yeah, in the airport.
I mean, he sees some fat people, I'd imagine. So, what's up, pup?
Nothing, man.
You got anything you want to talk about, or you just want to look at, what are you playing on there?
I'm looking at my notes. A bunch of it's for when Kyle's going to be here, like his pop collection versus my pop collection. Because
can't you do that on your own time?
Well, like,
I mean, like, I don't know that I want my fans listening to that. Our fans, sorry.
Oh, so this was funny too. On the one flight I was on, I think right after that Dallas flight, because it's in my notes shortly after that, this guy, he was telling everyone that he was going to Cambodia. And he was very creepy and younger guy. And he said this was his second time there, going back to Cambodia.
He likes little girls.
Well, or like lady boys, right? Isn't that a big thing there?
Yeah, I guess. Probably.
I'm not sure, but he's definitely was a fucking creep. So he was on the plane. He was one row ahead of me, but also across the aisle, you know? Yeah. So I could see him, like, the whole flight, okay? So, like, before... Okay. This is another thing. It was like a 1 hour and 20 minute flight. It was from a very small airport to Dallas. It was before I went to Dallas. And so it's like a very short flight. This guy puts it these
the worst fucking story.
He puts these there's been plenty worse.
It's like a Jimbo story. You're okay.
I keep remembering different
things. I know, and you keep saying things out of fucking order.
Go ahead and start over.
I wouldn't mind, to be honest. I'm so fucking lost.
Okay, so I'm in Garden City, Nebraska, this tiny little airport, right? Uh-huh. It's only in one room. I hear this guy tell several people that he's going to Cambodia.
Uh-huh.
And that it's his second or third trip back. Can't remember which. And he went into the bathroom like two or three times there, which was very strange to me also. So we get on the plane. He's one row ahead of me, but across the aisle.
It's diagonal.
Right. And on the aisle, right? So I can see him clearly the whole flight. It's a 1 hour and 20-minute flight from Garden City, Nebraska to Dallas, okay?
Yeah.
Very short flight.
Okay.
He puts fuzzy.
Mm-hmm. Fuzzy what? Yeah. What did he have?
Fuzzy. Like, you know, the things that mm-hmm. people put on over their eyes to go to sleep?
Yeah.
He put those over his eyes to go to sleep, but they were purple and, like, fuzzy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, and then once the plane takes off, he did that immediately. So then the plane takes off, he puts his seat back when he's able to, and it's a smaller plane, so the seats aren't as big as a normal plane, and the guy behind him is, like, my size. So the guy, like, shifts his weight a little bit and bumps the guy with the fuzzy thing over his eyes. He bumps his seat. So the guy turns around. And he still has these things covering his eyes. And, like, he gives – I can tell that he gives the guy a dirty look.
Through the uh-oh. You're gone. You're gone. Your headphones – I mean, your mic's gone. What happened? Is there a switch on the microphone? Oh, yeah.
Is that better?
It's a lot better, yeah, because now that the microphone's on – like how you looked at me, like I kicked it and fucking knocked the switch loose.
You're the sound guy.
For the
man.
Fourth time, can you finish this fucking story?
So I can just tell that the guy gave him an ugly look through the mask.
Yeah.
Through the fuzzy mask.
That was the end of the story.
Which was fucking weird because he was wearing a mask. He couldn't see the guy. You know?
That guy went to Cambodia.
Yeah. All right. It's been emotional.
Goodbye.